Listen carefully. When God gives you an assignment, it's always going to be bigger than what you are able to handle. Because if he didn't, you wouldn't need any faith, would you? You wouldn't grow. It'll always be, listen, it'll always be beyond your maturity level. It'll always be beyond your skill level. And so there's going to be times you're going to have to ask yourself, what must I learn in order to lay a hold of this assignment?
Welcome to Words of New Hope with Dr. Wayne Cordero. Today, a message about a guy in the Bible you don't hear about every day. We're talking about Caleb. Out of the 12 men Moses sent to spy out the promised land, only Joshua and Caleb came back with a can-do attitude. The other 10 felt like grasshoppers. But I'm kind of giving away the story. Here's Pastor Wayne to fill you in with a message entitled, Against All Odds.
Well, take out your notes, turn it over. We're going to be speaking today on Against All Odds. But first, a fun story. A park ranger was speaking to some hikers, warning them. And they were going to hike up into the mountains. So the park ranger said, now, I need to talk to you about some bears, because there's bears up here. Now, brown bears are usually harmless, he said, and they want to avoid human contact. So we suggest, and he started passing out, we suggest you attach these small bells to your backpack so that when the brown bears hear you coming, it gives them time to scamper away. And so they're attaching, you know, their bells. And the ranger continues, and he says, but now grizzly bears are very different. Grizzly bears are very dangerous. If you see grizzly bear droppings, leave the area immediately. So they're tying their bells on and said, well, excuse me, said one of the hikers. Well, how do you know if it's grizzly bear droppings? Easy, said the ranger. You'll quickly notice that in grizzly bear droppings, they are full of little tiny, small bells. Sometimes, regardless, the odds are going to be stacked against you. Today, I want to talk about against all odds. If you take a look at the people in the Old Testament and New Testament, the ones that have robust faith that God actually puts their stories in the Bible, they were all against the wall. Odds were stacked against them. Abraham, leave Ur of the Chaldees and go to a land where I will tell you. Like, just take up and go? Yeah. Which way? This is good. Where are we going? I'll let you know along the way. So we just start walking? Yeah, just start walking. The wife goes, Abraham, where are we going? I don't know. Just let's go. Now you find Moses. Moses, you're going to take about 2 million people through the desert. We need to organize this. We're good. Just start going. And you better go fast because there's people wanting to kill you. The odds are stacked against Gideon, who starts with 32,000 to go against the Midianites. God whittles them down to 300. If you had any actuarian, they would tell you that you are roadkill, Gideon. You are hash. You are history. The odds are stacked against him. Against Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Against Esther, against Ruth. All of the great men and women, their faith was displayed under great odds. But today I want to visit with one of my wonderful heroes, someone that I respect very much. His name is Caleb. Caleb came out with the Exodus going to the promised land. And he must have been born right at the beginning because he's 40 years old when they're about to enter. So he was born in the wilderness. So all he knows is the wilderness. Now, he's about to enter the new land, and God says to Moses, I want you to send in a spy party. I want you to go check out the land. And so this is where we enter the story of Caleb as we talk about against all odds. Now, we're going to read it together, and it'll come up on the board. It's also in your notes, so if you will take a look at it nice and loudly, let's read what the Lord said to Moses. Would you read it with me? Go. The Lord said to Moses, send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites. And I want you to underline that, which I am what? remember that, to the Israelites. Continue. From each ancestral tribe, send one of its leaders. So they had how many tribes? 12. So 12 spies are going to go into the land. Now, 12 people are going to see the same land, the same hills, the same valleys. 2 will succeed. They'll get an A-plus from God. 10 get an F-minus. Now, why? Why did the 2 succeed and the 10 fail to do so? In this one story, it's going to hold for us lessons in these last days. In fact, the Bible calls the last days that we are in the culmination of the ages. And everything God has for us as instructions will have been played out long ago by others who were in the same situation. God records these, not for them, for us. In fact, that's exactly what Paul says in the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And it'll come up on the screen. Listen to what he says, and let's read it out loud. Because Paul is alluding to the Old Testament stories, and now he's saying this in 1 Corinthians 10. Read it. Go. These things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings for to on whom the culmination of the ages has come. You see, God knew that we would need instructions and examples. So he actually takes these stories, has them written down for whom? For us. It behooves us to read them because the divine mentors like Caleb, Joshua, Moses, Abraham, David, all the divine mentors of the Bible are awaiting our audience. Every problem that we will go through has already been gone through by someone, and they left clues behind for us, and they await our audience. But you see, if the enemy can keep us away from the Word of God, he keeps us away from the instructions that we are going to need so that we'll be a people of wisdom today. So God places those there. Now, remember, every problem we will encounter, God already has a solution for it. How many of you believe that? Yeah, he already solved it. Now, we haven't yet. And all we see is this massive problem that's giving us a terrifying disposition because we don't know what's on the other side. God's already solved it. Do you know that the answer is already there? God has the answer. It's already been solved. Only problem, he hasn't let you in on it yet. But the answer will not effectuate from you or me. It doesn't come from us. The answer comes from him. And it's designed that way because we have to seek him so that it's revealed to us. Ah, there's a relationship. God does everything with such strategy. He doesn't do things at random. He does things well, all things well, because he wants to not just have us solve a problem. He wants us to develop a relationship through that problem. Watch this. Let's say I encounter a problem here. Bang. God, help me. And God goes, oh, that's a problem. Yes. Boop. It's gone. Oh, thank you. Boom. Another problem. Oh, here it is again. Boop. Gone. Thank you. Another one. Boom. Oh, got a financial problem. Boop. Oh, got it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And boom. Another one. Here it is again. Boom. Gone. Thank you. Now, at the end of your life, do you think you will have grown at all? You're now just entitled and spoiled. On the other hand, God already has it solved. Bang, a problem hits. What do I do? Why? I don't know. And I fall on my knees. God, I really need your help. We need to cooperate in this, Wayne. Here's your part. Here's my part. Got it. So you need to take care of this, take care of that. I take care of this, take care of that. Little by little, the problem is resolved. Whew, thank you. I am left with a better relationship, a stronger character, a deeper faith, and a greater appreciation. Now I go. Do you understand how my life starts to increase? So he's changing us from glory to glory into his image. And one of his best tools is pain. And so we find here that every problem we encounter, he's already answered it. He's already got a solution. but it doesn't effectuate from us. It comes from Him. And as we seek Him, He begins to reveal to us the truth. That's why God says, as you seek me, then you will find me. But if you don't, I will always seem to be hidden from you. So there is a beautiful relational building that takes place. Now, I want you to see that God gives them seemingly impossible assignment, an impossible assignment. He's saying, I want you to go in the land and spy it out and see who lives there. Now, I am giving this land to you. He did not say, I have given. He says, I am what? Giving, which means it's in process. The promised land was theirs, but there was a part for them to play in this process for it to be apprehended. I need you to listen carefully. Although God promised them the land, they still had to contend for every square inch of it. God promises you, I know, Jeremiah 29:11, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans not for your calamity, but for your future and hope. So, okay, so you've promised me something. You have plans for me. Yeah, but Wayne, you have to contend for every square inch of that promise. It doesn't just happen passively because something is building along the way, because it's likeness that's my goal, not just convenience, not just fruitfulness or opulence or whatever. It's a relationship with me that brings you into my likeness so that when you get into the promise, you can steward it. Because remember, poverty will not be your greatest test. It will be prosperity. We can always steward poverty because we ain't got nothing. But when God makes you prosperous, can you steward that? To give you skills, capabilities, influence, authority, finances, can we steward that? The greatest test is not poverty, it's prosperity. But what God does is He builds character till then so that the promise, when it comes upon you, you're able to handle that. One day I was looking at this ring. It was like a 5-carat ring on this lady's hand, and my wife was there, and she said, honey, look at that ring. I said, woo. I said, you know, dear, I'd love to buy that for you, but your hand is already so beautiful, I don't want it to be defaced in any way by a rock. Your hand is just beautiful, honey. But then as I looked at that ring, I noticed something about the ring. And I had only a few tendrils holding that huge, massive rock on it. And it wasn't just, you know, like a cage around it. It was just a few fingers, tendrils. And I was thinking, you know, those tendrils that's holding that beautiful big old stinking diamond. I thought those tendrils must better be strong, because if that was weak, then any little bump, that $30,000 or whatever, it will be lost. So they better make those things strong, because you see, any wise jeweler would never put a beautiful gem in a weak setting. And I thought, God is a much wiser gemologist. And if He has a promise for us, you think He's going to be putting it into a weak setting? If this is our character, this is our relationship, this is the way we think, this is our attitude, this is our disposition, and if it's weak, you think God wants to put this massive promise in it? No, the first thing He's going to do, He's going to make sure that those tendrils are really strong, because then He knows that diamond will be safe. And God's promise is a million times more precious than that diamond. And He wants to put that in our stewardship, but not until the tendrils are strong. I thought, we need to make sure that we have a strong character so that when He does give us the promise, we'll be able to steward it. So He sends 12 in, and then He has them come back. And He says, give me a report, would you? So they return. Now, here is what they said. 10 of them said this. Would you read it with me? Go. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey, and here is its fruit. Wow. So they knew. There's proof. God's good. All right. Read the next word, go. Yeah. Yeah. So let's continue. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw the descendants of Anak there. That's the giants. Continue. The Amalekites live in the Negev, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live near the sea along the Jordan. They came out and said, look, Moses, the Amalekites are there, the Hittites, the Jebusites, and they have cellulites. They have their electrolytes are out there. They're riding on satellites, and they're not very polite. I bet they all have flashlights. And they were just completely in panic. Even the sons of Anak were there. Those the Nephilim, they were people of great stature. Sons of Anak, like Vikings and Samoans. And so they were living in the land. And then Caleb speaks up. Now listen to the difference juxtaposed between the two. Listen to the contrast. Continue, go. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we certainly do it. We what?
Yes.
Yeah, remember this. Someone once said to me, Wayne, success comes in cans, failure comes in can'ts. And the 10 said, we can't. Caleb said, we can. Success comes in cans, not can'ts. And I looked at that and I thought, wait a minute. All 12 went into the same land. They saw the same movie picture, didn't they? They saw the same documentary. They saw the same landscape. Yet 10 says can't. 2 said can. Why did they say, and now this is important for us because we're in these, the culmination of the ages, and he listed this so that we can learn lessons. Now, why did the 10 say can't do it? When God gives you an assignment, even here in these last days, in the culmination of the days, we wonder, why did God put us here? Why not in the 30s or the 20s or the 1500s or the 1800s or when things were a little better? Why did God put us here when things are tumultuous and strange and weird? You have all kinds of things going corrupt, they're just corrupting, whether it's things like Disney starting to do witchcraft or this when it was once children's pictures and now it's very strange and different underlying messages. Why is it going so funny, God? God put us here in this place. And then we have the wildfires or maybe family problems, etc. Why, God? Listen carefully. When God gives you an assignment, it's always going to be bigger than what you are able to handle. Because if he didn't, you wouldn't need any faith, would you? You wouldn't grow. It'll always be, listen, it'll always be beyond your maturity level. It'll always be beyond your skill level, and it will always be beyond your time management skills. And so there's going to be times you're going to have to ask yourself, what must I learn in order to lay a hold of this assignment? What do I have to learn to prepare? To the students that are here, I say to you, God has a great future and a hope, but you're not ready for that. So there's a preparation. He's strengthening those tendrils because he has that diamond for you. It's there. It's already there. It's already, he's already completed it. But he's waiting on us. We're not waiting on God. He's a wise gemologist, and he won't put a beautiful diamond in a weak setting. And so he begins to work on us. And we have to ask ourselves, what are some of the things we have to learn in order to lay hold of the promise of God? But the 10 were unwilling to contend. So they persist. Do you know it's always easier to make excuses than to build character? So they make more excuses. Let's see how they say when Caleb says we can, watch how they say we can't. Let's read this next one. And they answer right back. Ready? Go. We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are. They spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, the land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there were of great size. We saw the Nephilim there. The Nephilim are the sons of Anak. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked to them. Would you underline that sentence? Oh, it's not in your notes. That's right. Keep that in your mind. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. How do you look to yourself? How do you see yourself? Because see, often we're our worst enemies, aren't we? I can't do that. I can't do this. We criticize, we belittle, we disbelieve. Well, Wayne, you don't know. I'm in a bad place right now. But listen very carefully. Where you are is not who you are. Where you are does not define who you are. And where you've been will not define where you'll go. Don't you dare let it do that. You see, that might be a milepost in your past, but it ain't a hitching post. You always anchor yourself to your future, not your past. And in humanity, we often hitch ourselves to our past. We anchor ourselves to our past. Well, you know what my uncle did? You know what they did? You know what they said? So why are you anchoring yourself to yesterday? Anchor yourself to what could be, and it'll pull you forward. Because your best is yet to come. And so if you understand that, oh, yeah. So where you are is not what defines who you are.
You've just heard part one of a message entitled Against All Odds by Dr. Wayne Cordero of New Hope West in Eugene, Oregon. We'll pick it up right there on tomorrow's broadcast.
Rejoice, all the earth rejoice. He wraps himself in light, and darkness tries to hide, and trembles at his voice, trembles at his voice. How great.
Remember the lesson. If you say you can or if you say you can't, either way, you're right. As you think in your heart, that is how you will be. Until next time, God bless you and aloha.